This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back. This is the Chelsea Fancast, and we are going to talk about a very important year in Chelsea's history, which is the 1970-71 season. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I was far too young. I mean, just to put this into context for you all, Chelsea didn't really come into my consciousness really until 1976. I didn't start going until kind of mid to late 80s. So, you know, this meant nothing to me at the time. But, I mean, the more I got into Chelsea and the more I, you know, read about our history, yes, we do have history and all of that kind of thing. One of the things I was always really, really drawn to was the season in which Chelsea won their first European trophy, because having grown up in the 70s and the 80s, when Liverpool, Forest, all of these teams were winning European trophies, you know, easily, I was always very proud of the fact that Chelsea had kind of certainly, you know, won a European trophy before Liverpool. I mean, I know that Man City, funnily enough, were the holders this year, and we knocked them out in the semi-final. So we weren't the first English club to win a European trophy. But it always seemed really important to me that we'd got our name on the honours board therein. So I was always very proud of this. And then going through, the more Chelsea people I got to meet, I was always really delighted. I mean, for example, you know, one of the early kind of peripheral members of the fan cast was Psycho Phil, who was Chris and Stu's father. And I know that he was at Athens, and that always, you know, endeared him to me hugely, the fact he was there. And then there's a few other people, John Fleming, that many people who listen to the show will know he was in Athens, which is why he's called Athens John. So there are a few people, that I know who were actually there. And I think that's a massive badge of honour, because, of course, you know, there were about 2,500-3,000 that went there for the final, but it was held, the replay was 2 days later, and not everybody could stay, so only about 200 remained. And I just think that's a wonderful story, which we will probably get to in part three, because I think, first of all, we need to talk about the season as a whole, particularly the league season. Remember, Chelsea went into this having won the FA Cup, which we talked about last week, beating Dirty Leeds in the replay up at Old Trafford. And I would imagine, as a result of that, Jonathan, hopes for this season were pretty high, weren't they?
Yes, and it was consequently a bitter disappointment, finishing sixth. And I think we went out in the fourth round of the Cup as well. It was a bit of a season of turmoil that way. You could see that some players who'd been fixtures just didn't play very often. So Eddie McCready only played 14 times. I can't remember whether he was injured or not. Benetti was injured for a period, so Phillips played for 14. He was pretty good. He wasn't as good as Benetti, who was a really world-class goalkeeper, of course. What I'm intrigued about, which is something I never really thought about at the time, was that Peter Housman, who was vilified by lots of fans. I kept saying he kept being called Mary. He played 37 times, except he only scored one goal. But he was a much better player than people let on. And of course, it was the emergence of one of my favourite ever players for Chelsea, who unfortunately, when everything fell apart, was transferred really quickly, was Keith Weller, who played 36 times, but he only had, he scored 4 goals, but he was a big, big player in the Cup Winners' Cup. But he was, we just waxed lyrically about him for a moment. He was very, very quick and skillful on the right wing with beautiful crosses in. And it's one of those players that you just thought, I want him to play all the time. I really, he's going to be great for Chelsea for the rest of his career. And I think we paid $100,000 for him. And he was a victim of the building the stand and it all falling apart. And he was a great disappointment to me leaving. It's in the same way that Hazard was a disappointment. You know, it's when you see great players playing for your side and you think, what's going to happen to this guy? How's he going to fit in for the rest of his career here at Chelsea? And we were used to having success at that period. It was a period where this was carried on from 63. So for it'd been 8 years of having really exciting football at the Bridge. And this was just a continuation of it with players who were still coming through from not from the youth team, but I mean, they were players who played with the youth. So we still had Ron Harris. We still had John Boyle. And what we had, and John Hollins was still playing. And you had from the year before, obviously, you still had Ozzie and Hutchinson. And Baldwin didn't play as much. And I think that's also was testimony to the, as I said last week, he was always substitute. He was never, this is why I personally, when you're little, I loved George Graham, who he was swapped for with a fee. And I never understood why. And yet he was there and thereabouts, is considered, you know, part of that setup, but didn't play very often. And I never looked at him and thought, oh, he's a great player. I thought, contributes. But, you know, whereas Hollins, for example, played 40 games, played more than anybody else that season. And I can't really emphasise how fantastic Hollins was as a player. And also, you felt, if you've been watching him since he came in as a youth player, this feeling, which I think we're going to experience more and more, that he's one of yours, that he really has come from somewhere good in the club, and he's just continued. And I'm afraid he soured it by becoming not a great manager for the club, but as a player was a bundle of energy and industry. And I think his one cap for England was just a complete joke, because he was an unbelievably consistent, ebullient performer. Annoyingly, didn't score a goal. But that's actually their substitute. I've got it all wrong. They're all substitutes, aren't they? They're all talking about.
He still didn't score a goal.
No, Hollins didn't score a goal.
Actually, no, I'm lying, mate. He did. He scored 9 goals that season.
He did. He scored 9, absolutely. No, but he scored... Yeah, you're right. And the other one was, of course, was the continuation of Hudson as a great player. So you had some, amidst that, you still had great players. Cook was great. Hudson was great. Housen was still playing well. Hutchinson and Osgood were still playing. Though Osgood only played 27 times in the league, and I can't remember whether he was injured.
Well, I can tell you what happened. I mean, there were two very odd things that happened with Ozzy.
Yeah.
One was he did pick up a lot of injuries. But also, he strangely had a, you know, something. Well, he was kind of banned for a while, wasn't he? Because he picked up a lot of yellow cards or something. But he got an 8-week ban or something crazy.
And people were, and the press were against him as well, saying that he was a bad lot and that he was a filthy player. And God, it's all come back to me, bloody hell. There was a big campaign to try and get him suspended for even longer. But that's really typical of the way we were viewed as a club once again in that period, as this showbiz club, as this big, you know, they're not proper salt of the earth working class players. There's all something showbizzy about them, something hoity-toity about them being in the King's Road. And that was an image that we really had for the whole of that period, which, as you said last week, I think we've still got to an extent.
Always have. I think it's been, you know, that's for me, that reputation goes even beyond that, pre-war. I mean, the musical club, it's always been a showbiz club, largely because of where it was based.
In Chelsea, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many interesting things about this season. And I mean, let's talk about Ozzy. I mean, Ozzy had a phenomenal season the season before when we won the FA Cup. As we all know, Ozzy pretty much, well, he scored in every round. I mean, he was fundamental to us winning the cup. But it wasn't quite as good a season for him. No, okay, I know he was injured. I know he got the ban, but he only scored 12 goals. But I tell you what really strikes me as really interesting. Keithy Weller apart, who was brilliant in his first and only season, signed him from Millwall. He was our top goal scorer that season with 14.
That's right.
Yeah. But what surprises me, JK, about that is that we had set up, I mean, in a sense, what Sexton had done is he had tried to kind of move the side on from the FA Cup winning side. And we had a lot of flair players. It was really set up, in a sense, to score a lot of goals. And yet we failed miserably to do so, in a sense. I mean, as I said, Keith Weller was top scorer on 14 compared to Ozzy the season before on 31. The next highest was Ozzy on 12. And after that, you had Ian Hutch on 9. And Johnny Hollins on 9. So we did struggle a bit to put the goals away. I mean, yeah. I mean, as I said, the season before, 1969-70 season, we scored 96 goals in the league.
Yeah.
This season, we scored 52 in the league. So we seem to have a bit of a problem up front or scoring the goals. Do you remember it like that?
I just remember it being disappointing for finishing sixth. And you look at some of the results. You have to remember, of course, that Man City were a huge club at the time and with some fantastic players. Summerby and Bell and Francis Lee.
Absolutely. Lee bums Bell. Bell bums Lee. Lee and Bell bum Summerby with a knick-knack paddywhack. Give a dog a bone. Why don't City fuck off home?
Well remembered.
Remember that?
Well remembered. Yeah. But it's interesting watching the... So you look at some of the attendance figures at Leeds are still phenomenal. 58,000 watching them at home. Wow. Can you imagine that in the Bridge? 58,000. You're just you're a sardine watching jammed up against your little fence that you've chosen or your stanchion. And then of course, Huddersfield, they're only 28,000. Man United... 53,000, it corresponds to the club. I mean, there were similarly 61,000 for Spurs because the rivalry was still there in that period. But City, Man City, I'd say 51,000. Big, I mean, huge, phenomenal attendances, aren't there? 53,000 against Arsenal, and of course there was the other thing that came, was Mulligan came in and played, who was a really terrific player, given an opportunity to play. Curly-haired Mulligan, play was an Ireland international. Scored some fabulous goals coming in from wing-back. But yeah, he was very ahead of his time, Sexton, wasn't he? Attempting to play a kind of pattern of having... it was almost... not three, you didn't have three centre-halves, but you had overlapping full-backs non-stop. You hoped that they would be there to provide that not only the crosses, but they were like a winger. So he had wingers plus overlapping fullbacks. So in a sense, Weller was kind of midfield, but he wasn't. He played as a winger. I can't tell you how good Weller was. He's absolutely brilliant. And as you say, Chidge, a season, for goodness sake, what on earth was happening there? You also saw the emergence of Mickey Droy starting to play for Chelsea at 4 appearances. And Derek Smethurst, of course, who scored European Cup Winners' Cup final, who was another decent player. I mean, that was the thing. That was the you got. This is why the season was just slightly disappointing, 51 points, and yet crowned at the end, almost as if possibly they took their foot off the gas and allowed them to be competitive in the Cup Winners' Cup as a consequence.
Well, we'll talk about that in part two. I'm going to ask you about a couple of things. You mentioned Johnny Hollins, and John Hollins made highest appearance maker for Chelsea.
Yeah.
Arguably his best season. Of course, a lot of people will remember the wonderful goal he scored against Arsenal when he followed up his own rebound off the bar to wallop it past Bob Wilson from outside the area. Were you there for that one? We beat them 2-1. That was in August.
I was indeed there, yeah. And Mulligan scored, of course. Yeah, that was a wonderful goal. And in fact, it's that thing of them wanting to go home and watch it on the I think it was on Match of the Day, wasn't it? Was it goal of the season on Match of the Day? It was, yeah. If you ever get a chance on YouTube, please have a look at it. It's just I remember
like a bullet
going back the fact that you are going oh when it hit the bar, you know, that you do when it went back and got it, smashed it in. God, because he turns round on the ball, having hit the bar, because it's gone past him, turns round on it, gets in front of it again and smashes it in. But that was his energy. That he really was a top player, Johnny Hollins.
There was another, this was also the year, some people might have heard of this, some people might not, but when we played against Ipswich, which was also on Match of the Day, Alan Hudson scored a goal that wasn't a goal because it actually hit the side netting, but the referee basically gave the goal. This is from, I can't, what can I say? Were you at that one?
I was there, yeah, yeah.
So what happened? What do you remember of that?
He had a shot and in his silky way, and they all knew it had gone out for a goal kick, and the referee insisted that it was a goal, and Chelsea were all embarrassed and sort of slunk back past the halfway line, and the referee was mobbed by all the Ipswich players and ignored them all, and the linesman, in wonderfully typical fashion, didn't bother to attempt to whether he's. He agreed or not, or whether the angle was right. He just gave in to the superior powers of the ref, and the goal was given. And everybody in the crowd—that's what I love about it—knew it hadn't gone in. We all knew. We're all watching, and we're all going, "I never went in. I didn't go in." And we didn't dare say, "You're as blind as a bat, ref," because he just awarded a goal. But you know, it was we weren't going to chi-ike him, were we? We're not going to say, "You're shit." You know, you need to. He'd specs ref because he's just given us a goal out of nothing, but yet was so obviously had hit the stanchion. It was absurd. So, and because the ball also went out to the left of the goal. It's not as if it hit the stanchion inside and came out. It hit the stanchion and then went out towards the whether the invalid cards there, I can't remember, but went out towards the shed. So you thought, well, not only did it not go in, it must have to have ended up where it ended up. It must have gone through a hole in the net. So. But there was a kind of enormous chuckling going around the bridge as a consequence, which I thought was really good fun at the time. Everybody was laughing. Everybody was going, ha, 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 that never went in. Oh, ah, wow. That rather than cheering, because nobody was cheering because it hadn't gone in. It was that really weird moment. Fantastic moment.
So, I mean, we were in third for much of the season. Well, certainly towards the business end of the season, JK.
Yeah.
And you know, can you remember a moment when it dawned on you that we were not going to do better than that? There was a particular game you remember when you thought, well, that's it, the game's up. Because you know what we're like now, aren't we? We're all very conscious of that. All yeah, if we beat so and so and they lose to so and so, we'll end up in that
position. I think we lost to Tottenham in March, didn't we? 71. I think that
2-0 at home.
We lost to Arsenal away, and we lost to Spurs 2-1 away. Sorry, away. And I think it was then that it dawned upon us. And there were a couple of draws. There was a Southampton draw. So I think it then began to dawn. But also, I think they took their feet off the pedals, as I said, because they were going further and further in the Cup Winners' Cup. And I think that, whether psychologically, that then became more important to them because they were no longer in the FA Cup and they were no longer in the League Cup. So that was the focus.
Well, just having a look at the, you know, the results here, do you know what, Dane? I love this. You know, no matter how where you look at Chelsea, some things never change. You know, we were doing all right, you know, first kind of half of the season. Up until about January, and basically the wheels started to fall off. So we had a period, January the 9th, We played Man United at home. We lost 2-1. Then we drew to Palace. Then we lost 3-0 to Everton, who, of course, were the champions at the time. That was away. Then we lost 3-0 to City at home. So there was a period basically between January and February, about a month, where we lost four games, one of them in the FA Cup. That was the City game. So we lost to United, Everton and Wolves in the league. And I wonder if that's when the wheels fell off. And then, as you say, Jonathan, once we started to get to the business end of the... Do you know what? You know, what you're saying is not entirely true, because we'll talk about this in the next part.
It all took place in April, didn't it? You're right.
Yeah, you know, basically we played Bruges in the European Cup Winners' Cup, which would have been the semi-final, I think. No, that would have been the quarter-final. And we came back from 2-0 down in the first leg to beat them at home 4-0. This is a match that I want to talk about a lot in the next part. But after that, we only had two more losses. One was at Arsenal, up at Highbury, in the 3rd of April. And the other was a 1-0 loss to Burnley. So, actually, our form wasn't too bad by the looks of it. But it's funny how you don't remember it like that.
I always thought there was a chance. I know you always think they might put a run together of four or five games. It just seemed to be that there were less points. You know, you could finish sixth and lose a lot of games. You could finish third and lose more games than you can nowadays. That's the impression I got. I think the consistency was, you know, there was almost more that feeling that if you won at home and drew away, you'd win the title in that period. Whereas now it's, you know, people say, well, if you lose three games, you're then not going to be a contender for the title. So there was always that feeling that they might just bring it back. But yeah, I actually think it was more the Wolves loss in February that was and the Southampton draw, and then the Spurs loss. I think from then you then thought, well, then they drew with Huddersfield, who I think were relegated. Weren't they relegated that season? And I think that to me, that was the home draw against Huddersfield, which I remember being at 0-0, was a real downer. Because they were in the bottom two, and we did that thing of having beaten, you know, a decent club earlier on, then we lost to the bottom team.
Do you remember how many went down in those days? Was it four?
No, I thought it was two.
Well, okay, Blackpool finished in 22nd, Burnley 21st, West Ham 20th, Ipswich 19th.
Oh, so it wasn't Huddersfield. Okay.
No, they finished kind of mid-table. Interestingly enough, City finished 11th. Now, listen, before we go to the break, not including the European matches, what was your favourite match that season? Do you remember?
I'm trying to remember.
Beating Leeds 3-1 at home?
Yeah, absolutely. Every time. I so hated Leeds. We all hated Leeds.
And Leeds.
Yeah.
Guess what?
We all like Leeds.
Yeah. We do. So you were there at that one. Oh. I mean, you know, Houseman scored two, Ozzy scored one. Terry Cooper scored for Leeds. I think this one's been on one of those wonderful big match revisited on BT Sports recently. Interestingly enough, John Phillips was in goal that day.
Yeah.
But he was a decent keeper.
He wasn't somebody you'd go, oh, God, it's... in a sense, I think, I don't know, on a par with probably better than... I don't know, you can't say better than Caballero. You know, I thought Caballero did well the few games he played instead of Kepa. So,
can I ask a question, Chidge?
Yeah, please do.
Obviously, I'm fascinated by any season that the King of Stamford Bridge would have played in, but I'm also intrigued by Weller, because I did... I'd like Jonathan to elaborate more, because I did hear a lot of good things about him. I've got really good knowledge of the American leagues, and I know he ended his careers there, and eventually the late, great Keith Weller. Obviously, he's not with us anymore. So, because I noticed his goals did actually dry up a lot after Christmas, and he didn't score in the Cup Winners' Cup any other matches. So how good of a player was he actually?
His overall contribution. He was really exciting. It was a really exciting... I mean, perhaps that may be a reason why they got rid of him. I don't... Why Sexton? Sexton was very specific. Very specific about creating sides, you know? But also they were running, as we were saying, they started running out of money.
But I'll say Sexton's, because I thought you was going to go down the path that Sexton would have been similar to Sarri's. So if Weller wasn't listening to his coaching, then
I don't know. I didn't get that. I wasn't informed then. I was too keen on. I still am to an extent. Just the result. You just wanted them to win all the time. Whereas I'm now more capable of analysing what's going on. At the time, I just thought he was a really exciting player who was unbelievably quick, beat people with great regularity, and centre. I like to find out how many assists he made.
Yeah,
because he was really, really. And the very fact that he played him 36 times in the league.
They sold him for exactly the same amount they paid for
51
him.
Times. That's hardly a sign of somebody that he didn't approve of.
No, you're absolutely Dexter. Correct, yeah.
So, I am very upright, curly-haired, exciting, really exciting player. And as I said, so disappointed that he got sold. And it must have been a financial reason, because it can't have been a form thing. You would never have played him in the first team if that was the case.
Yeah, I just wondered if it was going down the Venable sort of George Graham road.
No, I don't. And I don't think he was difficult. I didn't get that impression. But once again, we didn't have the rumor mill in the same way.
I think, from what I understand, and I'm dipping into this again. Actually, Tim Rowles's wonderful book, Stamford Bridge is Falling Down, which basically starts in this season, and the perspective on it is that, you know, basically Chelsea were at the top of a wave. You know, they won the FA Cup. They were about to win the European Cup Winners' Cup. They should have been on the crest of a wave. There was a real feeling of positivity around the club. Brian Mears decided to go and build a new 50,000-seater stadium. They'd bought the freehold of the ground. All of these things were coming together. But that was not happening. Basically, what was happening behind the scenes was that they were already suffering financially because of what they're about to do with the club, and they were starting to let players go. So instead of buying really, really top quality players, they were beginning to let players go. Keith Weller, it's cited by a lot of the players in Tim's book when he writes about this, was seen in retrospect as the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of the current squad, who were really ambitious, the likes of Ozzie, Hudson, Dave Webb, people like that, thought, well, if you're letting people like him go, we're not going in the right direction.
No.
And that was the start of the disaffection, apparently, which is really,
sense.
Yeah, really, really fascinating, because he was wonderful. And I know people like you, Jonathan, who were there to see him play in that year, who just talk so fondly about him and effusively about him. What a great player he was. And then we let him go. And, you know, I cannot recommend Tim's book highly enough. It covers the period we're about to go into, actually.
Yeah.
And then beautifully, you know, the Eddie McCready book that Marco and Dave and I think Kelvin and Mark Meehan wrote, that covers the next period after that. And then when that's finished, Kelvin's book, Celery, representing Chelsea 80s, will cover everything we're going to talk about in the 80s. We've got all mates have written these fantastic books, which will give us a really lovely insight to add, I think, complement Jonathan's memories. Now, we're going to have a quick break, and then we're going to talk about the wonderful, as I said, something that I always, you know, view with massive affection was when we won the Cup Winners' Cup final in Athens. But before I do, just a quick mention, just to say thank you, as always, to the lovely people who are on Patreon, who I am massively indebted to. Thank you so much for your support of what we do. If you do love what we do on this show and you want to help us keep it afloat, you know, any amount, large or small, really, really helps. So, easy to do. Just go to Patreon, patreon.com/ChelseaFancast, and you can donate whatever you like every month. And as I said, it doesn't have to be a lot. I mean, you know, the fanzines, Ari Up, only £1. So, you know, whatever you feel is appropriate. It's a good way of keeping in touch with me as well. So you can message me and, you know, I always say this every week about trying to think of things to do on there for you. I'll keep racking the old mighty brain. A bit difficult when there's no football on at the moment, but we will not be downhearted and we will keep on at it. Anyway, we'll be back after this break. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Cheech.
JK.
In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chich, I'd be bereft, inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live. It's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great. But yeah, I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK. And best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. Where do I sign up, Ginge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/Chelsea Fancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box.
Fans, real opinions. I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to the Chelsea Football Fancast. Up the Chelsea!
Footballfancast.com.
Right, welcome back. This is the Chelsea Fancast, and I am delighted to be joined by Mr. Jonathan Kidd.
Buonasera.
And even more delighted, if that could indeed be possible and true, but to welcome Dane Whittle for his debut Chelsea Fancast.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone.
Lovely to have you on board, Dane. Now, we've spent part two talking all about Chelsea's 1970-71 season, and I want to kind of focus on what most people remember from this season, which, of course, is the wonderful European Cup Winners' Cup campaign, which of course ended up with Chelsea winning the cup against Real Madrid, would you believe, in Athens after a replay. Chelsea like going to replays in cup finals, and they certainly did in those days. The thing is, it was a funny old competition, really, wasn't it? We had the European Cup, which was very much lauded as the premier European competition, quite rightly so. Which, of course, England had begun to have success in because United had won it in 68. Celtic had famously won it in 1967. Leeds were all of our clubs were there or thereabouts. So the Cup Winners' Cup was kind of a bit of a misnomer. Although, you know, England had a lot of... I mean, City had won it the year before. I think there were the Fairs Cup competitions were around. West Ham had won it, haven't they, in 1965. So English clubs, like they then went on to do in the 70s, were fairly good at winning trophies in Europe. But I tell you, the one thing that I don't understand, Jonathan, is what the mindset of the fans was to this competition. I mean, you know, like now, we're all very highly tuned in, aren't we, to Chelsea being in European competition and the importance of winning it and doing well. You know, I just can't. I mean, and I know we'd been in European competition in the mid 60s, although we'd been a bit unlucky. I mean, we lost to Barca in that semi, didn't we, in 60, yeah. 65. Yeah. What were the fans' expectations and what were their feelings around the Cup Winners' Cup before we kind of kicked a ball in Salonika, in fact, wasn't it?
Well, it wasn't as excited as. I think the FA Cup generated, just because you just need to look at the attendances to see that they're all 40,000 and 45,000. I mean, it's a huge crowd, but it's still 15,000 down on what you'd expect for playing a top game. And even the Man City semi-final only had 45,000. So I don't think it was that... It meant as much to the fans as the diehards obviously they'd go and watch it. I mean, 45,000 diehards. I was at the Man City game. I actually don't think I went to any of the other rounds, which I think just from the school aspect, really. But I was definitely at the Man City game. And I can't remember about the club Brugge. My mother's fear all the time was that if there was any extra time, it was too late for me. So with school. So I tended not to go to the evening games for that reason at that period. But yeah, I just got the impression that we weren't, I don't know. There was a kind of feeling that the European Cup was the best, as you said, was the hugest prize to get because it was so much more difficult. And in actual fact, the Cup Winners' Cup was a slightly, a weedy addition in comparison. But it was still a very exciting time to see us progress, particularly after beating City, who were, once again, I keep saying, were a very good team. And we beat them 2-0 on aggregate. And the final, of course, then we're all madly keen on watching it. And it's on as a late night, isn't it?
Well, let's park the final for now, because I want to go back to the beginning of it. Because I've interviewed, as you know, for the Chelsea special, the likes of Johnny Boyle, Tommy Baldwin, Chopper, all of whom figured hugely in this European cup run. And I've always been fascinated in it. And Johnny Boyle and Tommy Baldwin particularly are hilarious on this. But the impression that they certainly gave me was in the early rounds, it was treated by them as a bit of a like a jolly, you know. They were going, I mean, like the Salonika, they loved September, beautifully sunny, lots of air hostesses for them to, you know, have hanky-panky with on the way there and on the way back, and they did. And a bit of sun, sea and sand and sangria, basically, with a bit of nookie thrown in. So they were all very, all very kind of loving the jolly aspect of it. Even Sofia, I think, you know, there was a bit of air hostess shenanigans going on. But really the competition, I don't think, really came to life for Chelsea until the Bruges match, where they lost 2-0 away. But in the return leg, they pulled out. I mean, actually, from people I know who were there and remember this, and even talking to Tommy Baldwin about it, who was brilliant on this. And by the way,
it's a great performance. Great.
Yeah, well, I'll plug this again later, but do please, if you're interested in this tournament particularly, Tommy Baldwin in the Chelsea special is brilliant on this. But and he talks a lot about the Bruges match, and he remembers it fondly. And it was a real ding-dong match. It went to extra time. I mean, basically, Ozzy put in an absolutely superb performance. He and Tommy Baldwin hooked up brilliantly that night, as they often did. And Ozzy scored in 81 minutes to take it into extra time. Houseman had scored on 21 minutes. And then it was the Ozzy and the Baldwin show in extra time, with Ozzy scoring his second on 114 minutes and Tommy Baldwin scoring on 117. So that kind of took us beautifully through to a semi-final against Man City, which, of course, Jonathan was at. Do you remember anything about that?
I think I was at the Brugge game as well, actually.
Do you remember? What do you remember?
The tension of being 2-0 and level on aggregate and thinking they might score, you know, that thing. So I can't remember. I need to find my programme collection, which is in storage at the moment. And once again, it's always, if I've got the program, I was there. But it's these little things. When you mention something, I then go, oh, yeah, I remember. God, bloody hell, yeah, I remember it being. It's that tense thing of thinking, you know, you've got to 2-2. And then every single attack they have, you're convinced they're going to score. And you want so much you to score. And then, it's obviously there's extra time. And then, yes, I think Osgood was supreme. But you have to remember that Osgood was a wonderful player. There was always every chance that a goal would be. The accuracy of his shooting is something that you must really remember, that he from wherever he was, he'd find the top corner frequently or just get it. It was just a really class act, Osgood. Wonderful, wonderful player.
I've got some lovely...
game was attrition, really.
Yeah, it was. Good tactical battle, wasn't it? I've got some lovely quotes from our mate from last week, Jonathan. Desmond Hackett, remember him?
Yeah.
But in the... I don't know what papers these are, sadly, but they're just wonderful. The Daily Sketch. God, what was the Daily Sketch? Anyway.
It joined with the Mirror, didn't it?
Eventually. Right, may have done. Brian Scovell, it's a joy night for... King Aussie. Aussie and Sexton are quoted here. Dave Sexton says, this was the greatest Chelsea night since we won the FA Cup. With only 9 minutes left and another goal needed, I wondered whether to make a substitution, but I decided to leave things alone. Aussie says, I wasn't shattered after 90 minutes. I was after 45, but I just kept plugging away. When I got the equaliser, I knew we would win. And the point being here, as Desmond Hackett writes, says, Peter Osgood came out of 8 weeks in forced exile last night to put Chelsea into the semi-finals of the European Cup Winners' Cup. This unforgettable match went into 30 minutes of extra time, and every second of those 30 minutes was an edge-of-the-seat thriller as the Belgians gallantly tried to resist the endless storming charges of Chelsea. Osgood marked his return from the Football Association's disciplinary suspension with a goal in ordinary time, which was what equalised the match, and then with the first of Chelsea's two match-clinching extra-time goals. The first goal of the night was scored by Peter Housman after 20 minutes. Tommy Baldwin, playing as though his life depended upon this game, flicked the ball through to Osgood, who nodded down for Housman. So basically, as I said, Aussie and Tommy Baldwin, as I said, he talks about this, and he had an absolute blinder. So I think, you know, ultimately it has to go down really as one of Chelsea's greatest European nights. I mean, we've had a few, JK, but I'd say that's got to be up there.
Yeah. I remember the celebrations at the end of the game were absolutely phenomenal, actually. And yep. Woe betide if you'd left early. It was that thing of some people leaving early and people going, what, where are you going? You know, the madness of it, because, yeah, it was a great victory.
So, we, as you said earlier on, JK, we dispatched Man City in a very tough, tight, tactical game. 1-0 to us through a Smethurst goal at home, and then we went through an away goal, scored, I believe, by Healy, whoever he was, on 42 minutes. But we kept them out. Really clever, classic. Sexton was a very good tactical manager, and he did very well. Their City, of course, as we know, were the holders, although in the league they finished in 11th, so they perhaps weren't the side that they had been, although... But the likes of, just looking at who was in their side, JK, Tony Book.
Neil Young.
Neil Young, not the rock singer, obviously. Summerby was playing, Franny Lee. No Colin Bell, interestingly enough.
Yes. I remember Neil Young, I'm sure I've told this story before, at the home tie, I was trying to get autographs and I was standing about and he said to me, yeah, he said, you know where? You know, there's a park round here, kidder. And I said, yeah, I think you can go down Eelbrook Common round the corner there. And he went, great. And one of the other girls who was collecting autographs, she wasn't that young. He proceeded to, the coach went off one direction, he went off into the other. So I wonder what he was up to.
Anyway, so we end up in Athens for the final. By the way, actually, in that City game, Keithy Weller also had a blinder in that. Apparently a brilliant Weller free kick pushed in by the City keeper away. That's what helped us into the final. So Weller took free kicks as well. Now, the final in the Kariakakis Stadium in Piraeus in Athens. The interesting thing about this, my memories... I mean, obviously, it was, you know, it went to 1-1 the first match very quickly. I mean, basically, that was... nigh on tragedy. I mean, Aussie scored a great goal. Aussie, as a very Drogba-esque in a way, loved scoring in finals, didn't he, JK?
Yeah.
He scored on 56 minutes. Really good goal, good shot, 1-0, absolutely in control. Typical Chelsea. Zocco gets the equaliser right on literally the last kick of the game. And apparently, I was watching it today, the highlights, and the police, Barry Davies and his wonderful... I always think that Barry Davies sounded a bit like Michael Palin in Monty Python. If you listen back to him, you'll see what I mean. He's got... I don't know what it is. It's the tone he comes out with. But he was saying in the... You know, because BBC televised the replay live on TV. And that's the on the DVD that I've got. And he was saying that, you know, how unlucky Chelsea were because the police were already ringing around to prepare to, you know, give Chelsea the trophy. And then bloody Zocco scores in the last minute. Now,
did Dempsey make a mistake, if I remember?
Yes, he might have done. He might have done. I can't remember. What do you remember the first?
We called Dempsey, you know.
What?
Demps.
Demps. Well, how about that? Yeah. What do you remember the first leg?
Great goal from Osgood. I saw the. It was only the highlights I remember seeing. But you know, you do that thing of not.
They only had the highlights.
Yeah. Exactly.
Do you know what? I found this out today because on the DVD that I've got, they've got the highlights of the first match where it was clearly filmed. It's filmed. Yeah. And it's in colour because we're wearing the infamous or the famous blue kit with yellow socks.
Yeah.
Of course, Real Madrid playing white, a bit like Leeds Absolutely. In the 70 final.
But it shows you at the time what British TV and what thought about the Cup Winners' Cup, the fact that it wasn't live and it was only highlights.
But they had the second match live on BBC.
Indeed.
Kenneth Wilson
realised that there was an opportunity to get some revenue for it from the
second. Yeah, maybe so. Well, let's zoom along to the second match. I mean, now you're quite excited. It's on BBC, so you're watching Kenneth Wilson home do his thing. What do you remember of the final?
I just remember us being in control most of the time. I thought it was such a good side. And they were supposed to be the great Real, but the bubble had burst after the first one. You know, we'd seen that they were there for the taking, and we should have won it. And it was consequently it was something that I thought you never know with Chelsea, but we hoped we'd win. So we thought we'd win. It was a terrific. I mean, of course, Dempsey scored the first goal, didn't he? With a header,
he did.
I remember, and then Ozzie scored another one. And
let me just read what they
get one in the last.
Well, I'm just going to read this passage about another book from a mate we can plug here. But this is the Bible for Chelsea. This is Chelsea Football Club: The Complete Record from our mate Rick Glanville. Also, I should hasten to add, because he co-wrote this with Paul Dutton, who's also a Chelsea statistician. And there's just a couple of passages here. It says, the final at the Kariakis Stadium was an engaging game of nip and tuck, artistry, then resistance. Charlie Cook and Bonetti were in superb form, but it was Osgood who scored what looked the winner until a John Dempsey error allowed Madrid to level just as the ceremonial band was ready to match on the pitch. So yet again, we do it. Snatching a defeat from the jaws of victory. So Chelsea. Madrid to level just as the ceremonial band was ready to march on the pitch. David Webb was awesome in a pressured extra time. So yeah, Flightis scored on 75 minutes. So we were 15 minutes
winning. I remember it exactly. Yeah. That. Yeah, the same thing happened again. Yeah, God.
Anyway, basically, yes. David Webb, brilliant in extra time. And then Dempsey, as I said, you're holding your head in your hands, JK.
It's all come flooding back to me.
It's all come flooding back.
Yes, it's all come. I remember it so well. It's that thing of 1-0. Think, please don't score. Please don't score. Oh, God, they've scored. Oh, God, it's that. Oh.
Anyway, he says here in the second leg, now Sexton's tactical nous shone through with a brave 4-3-3 formation in which Alan Hudson, Baldwin and Cook again starred. Chelsea dominated early on. Yeah. Dempsey redeemed himself, driving home a follow-up from his own header, and Osgood struck brilliantly from the edge of the box to make it 2. Rail managed pressure and one goal, but Chelsea's heroes would not be denied and danced around the Kariakis Stadium at the end as Ron Harris held the trophy aloft. Another star could be added to the famous Chelsea badge.
You cannot underestimate how brilliant Hudson was.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, absolutely.
Match of his life.
Phenomenal player. And I keep forgetting about him in my assessments of Chelsea's best players because, I mean, the skill from that boy, 18, bloody hell. And it just, once again, the fact that he went off to Stoke was just a disaster for the club at that period because they had such good players. It was such a good team. The joy that you had watching these guys play, you know. But anyway, yeah.
Well, I think you're right. And I think, you know, Charlie Cook was excellent. By the way, Charlie Cook came into midfield for that second match because John Hollins, who had been our absolute rock that season, was injured. John Hollins played in the first match, but not the second because he was injured. So Charlie Cook came in and played.
He played for Palace, Cook, when he was transferred there.
So Charlie Cook came in. But Charlie Cook, you know, David Webb, Tommy Baldwin, Ozzy, and particularly Alan Hudson were brilliant. But I'd say that was, you know, Alan Hudson's greatest moment as a Chelsea player, and he would say that himself. Just to finish this up, there's another lovely side to this, which kind of resonates with what we were saying earlier on, because this was kind of as good as it got for Chelsea for a while, and it did in many respects go downhill after here. In between, there were 2 days. Basically, they played the first leg on Wednesday, the 19th of May, would you believe? That's a special day in a Chelsea calendar, isn't it? Wednesday, the 19th of May was the first match. The second match was played 2 days later on the 21st of May. Now, of course, most of the Chelsea supporters had to go home. I mean, for example, the attendance in the first match was 45,000. In the second, it was only 24,000. Now, I think we had about 3,000 Chelsea fans out there, from what I'm led to believe, but it could have been more, I don't know. And from what I understand, there are only about 200 left for the Friday game. The Chelsea players, their recuperation after the first leg, which of course the first match, which of course had gone to extra time, was to spend the entire day in a drinking session at the hotel, drinking cocktails led by Ozzy, Alan Hudson and Tommy Baldwin and Johnny Boyle. I have this word of mouth from Johnny Boyle and Huddy and Tommy Baldwin. They basically just got shit-faced in the hotel on a big drinking session. This is the day before the second match. Also, because there were so many Chelsea fans that had stayed over with nowhere to stay, that half of them stayed. And Tommy told me they had fans sleeping in their room,
brilliant,
joining in. I mean, it's just classic Kings of the Kings Road drunken lunacy. And then they turn up the next day, and I watched some of the highlights today. And there's no doubt, JK and Dane, they were absolutely in control for most of that match. You know, Real Madrid really hardly had a kick, and they were quite an average side for them, because actually by not winning that match, Real Madrid failed to get into Europe for the first time in about 15 years. So that tells me that they weren't even doing that well in the league. But they're still Real Madrid, and we beat them in a final to win a European Cup, and we did it half pissed. I love that.
Obviously Real Madrid missed the trick. They should have went on the razzle as well.
Well, the interesting thing is, Dane, is that if you go and read Tim's book, you know, we said that it all began to go a bit pear-shaped after this. But half of that was down to the culture that they had. Chelsea were a very difficult side to manage, with a lot of big egos like Ozzy and Huddy, Tommy. You know, they were just a really difficult team to manage. They liked to do their own thing and they wouldn't be told. And Dave Sexton was a great tactician, but not a brilliant man manager. And he didn't really know how to manage them. And, you know, when everything was going great and they were winning, it was fine. But when they hit a bit of a wall, it's different. And I think, you know, whilst it's brilliant from our point of view that we had this great team that used to love getting pissed and still be able to turn up, actually, I think in the end, that may have been what did for them. I don't know, JK, what do you think?
I heard that he couldn't actually deal with them in the end. It became too much for him. And I think he was quite a sensitive soul, Sexton, from what I heard. And it was all too much for him. And it's no coincidence, of course, he went to Queen's Park Rangers and they became a powerhouse for a short period and almost won the league in 76 with David Webb and McClintock obviously playing with them as well. And Johnny Hollins, who was the other Chelsea player who played for them?
Venables,
yeah.
Captain.
Yeah. And they were a top side. Because he was so tactically astute. And, the egos were too enormous at Chelsea. I think actually if Sexton had stayed and there had been a bit of money, you'd have seen some of the more difficult players being moved out, but being replaced with top-notch players.
And that's not what happened because of the money.
Indeed.
Well, I don't know about you two. Actually, final word to Dane, really, because I know it's difficult when, you know, Jonathan and I are in full flow, even though I wasn't there. But Dane, you know, just that's some thoughts for you on this.
Yeah, I love the story about them having a good drink and having supporters in their rooms. It's funny. I did notice substitutes. Was there more substitutes allowed in the European competitions than there was in the league?
Yeah, no. It must have been. Four, weren't there? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Were they really?
Yeah, two substitutes in the first leg. Tommy Baldwin come on and Paddy Mulligan. So just, yeah, that intrigued me quite a bit. Yeah, obviously, being the age I have, I've heard so much about so many of these players. And I have no memory of, I never watched him, I wasn't born. But yeah, I hold him in such high esteem. I have a couple of Peter Osgood collectible, you know, autographs. I've read quite a few of the books. And yeah, I'd recommend any of the books, even the ones you said, Tim Rowles one, that's a wonderful book. Just to get a feeling of what life was like at Chelsea in these times. And very envious of Jonathan, you know, you tell some wonderful stories. It sounds so amazing.
A lot of misery there, Dane. A lot of misery.
I can imagine, but I would have loved to have
that period.
It.
That Tim Rowles book is fabulous. I absolutely agree. Yeah. Fabulous book. And the horror I had with it was that I knew what was going to happen and it still upset me.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
Because you thought, oh no, that terrible event. Oh God, yeah, oh no. And my dad was very much involved with my support at the time. And he and I just used to discuss, you know, I was little and yet I still discussed, you know, the whole process of Doherty's, the Blackpool thing when he just dropped everybody. I was so upset about.
Is that when Emlyn Hughes broke Ozzy's leg?
That was later on. That was
was that
67, Chidge? Do you remember when Ozzy's leg?
A bit earlier than that, I think.
Was it 60? No, it was 60.
Can't remember. Is the honest answer?
That was with Bridges and all the other players. I wonder if that was. I wonder if you're right, actually.
Because I thought they all went looking for Emlyn Hughes, and that was the problem.
What, that night? That's why they all went out. That's not in Tim's book. That's a good one, actually.
Maybe I've missed.
No, I must look it up. You're absolutely right. Yes, because it was Emlyn Hughes who was involved in the tackle with him. Yeah, you're right. Was he
anyway,
for Blackpool at the time? Yeah,
I think he was. Yeah,
right.
Right, chaps, time is moving on. I have really enjoyed that little journey down memory lane, brilliant. JK. Thanks for recalling it as much as you do. We will be talking about the 71-72 season, which is a weird old season because we ended up in the League Cup. That was our last trip to Wembley until 1986, really, wasn't it? So that'll be a fun one to talk about. Losing to Stoke City in the Cup final. The release of Blue is the Colour, of course. So there's a few things to talk about with that. It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.